Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature, or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Jean Thomas.
Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
We're here today with Caleb White and Deborah Wren of New Leaf Eco Landscapes at newleafeco.com. We've been lucky enough to have Caleb on the show in the past to talk about trees. Deborah is the landscape designer and operations manager at New Leaf. And today we're going to talk about meadow making and maintenance. Welcome, Caleb and Deborah.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Deborah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your new role at New Leaf.
Yeah, sure. So I'm from the area. I'm from Austerlitz. I grew up on a farm, so I've always loved working outdoors. In my adulthood, I studied anthropology, and I got really into applied anthropology towards the end. So I went on, got my master's in sustainable development, focusing a little bit more on the policy end of things, food security issues. I worked with a nonprofit farm down in the DC area for a while, focusing on the food deserts outside of Washington, DC. And we had a volunteer on the farm who installed native plants, native gardens around the periphery of the farm. And we would invite her on tours, public tours sometimes, and she would talk about, you know, how the farm really focuses on food security for the community. What about food security for our pollinators? And that really struck me as, you know, like really kind of very insightful and, you know, a very universal perspective on it. And so I got into doing more landscaping. I did landscaping in summers, growing up and high school and college, and I really enjoyed it. I loved to be able to work outside. And then I just decided to get into doing more landscaping. You know, so much of our land is private property. We can make some really, you know, big impacts if we can shift our perspectives on how people want to landscape around their property.
She's our kind of people, I think. Wow.
I like the anthropology.
Wow, I'm getting excited. Yeah. I'm getting excited already, and it's bad because once you are our kind of people, we start asking questions.
Lots of questions. And, yeah, well, yeah. I met Caleb through the small town, of Columbia County, and yeah, it was just perfect timing, I think. I'd been doing this work on my own for a while and getting frustrated and feeling like I'm not going to make it or do enough or leave a legacy, and then met Caleb here, and he was looking for someone who wants to do exactly what I've been doing.
It's
so
perfect.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Perfect. Sometimes things work that way.
Right.
So we love to hear about people's background and how they got to us. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about meadows, and we're really chomping at the bit to talk about this because so many people are interested in making meadows but don't really have a good understanding of the maintenance and how to start them. So maybe we should start with the definition because I have things that I think are like little mini meadows,
right,
but they're probably not meadows in my yard. They're probably like meadow gardens. So how do you define it by size, the plant type, species? How are you defining meadow?
Well, I think of meadows as more of the kind of a larger ecosystem. It can be in a little bit drier area. It can be in a wet area. And it's about the native meadow species that tend to grow when there's been a disturbance, there's no longer a tree canopy, or those sorts of things. And it's kind of how they regenerate their own ecosystem. You have these herbaceous perennials that come up, so you have grasses and wildflowers, and there's usually kind of lower growing sedges underneath that kind of control this whole ecosystem. So that's how I would define a meadow.
And that's one that's existing, and so you're basically trying to recreate that.
Recreate that.
Ah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And is there a size criterion?
I don't personally really feel there would be a size criteria. I mean, you might not accomplish what you're trying to do in a very small size. Thinking like if you had a 10 by 5 foot space, you could make a meadow. You might not accomplish all of the biodiversity that you would want in a smaller size. I don't know if Caleb has anything he'd like to add to size.
I would say that I don't see any prerequisites for size. I think that that's one of the beautiful things about this type of landscape is that it fits wide open fields and it fits backyard gardens and everything in between. Now, the process to getting there can be different. The reasons for doing it can be different. But I think it allows people a pathway towards positive change, positive use of their yards. One thing that I've been focused on in this whole conversation around meadows is lawn conversion. You know, how can we minimize the amount of lawn, which truly is one of the worst ecological installations that you could have in the landscape from a diversity standpoint, from a water retention standpoint. It's really not doing much. So with that kind of concept in mind, that was really what drove me towards an interest in meadow building, was offering people an alternative to the lawn.
As a person who lives between golf courses,
right?
Yeah,
I can value non-lawn. You have people coming now. It's kind of a fad. It's very Martha these days. Everyone wants a meadow in their front lawn instead of the turf. And then once they get one, they say, oh my God, it's just wild stuff. What kind of expectations are you seeing when clients come and say they want a meadow? Are they being realistic?
I would say that half of the time that I'm talking with clients about a meadow, it's because I've suggested it. I think that we're having a conversation about a piece of property. They're saying, yeah, this area's never really worked for me, or yeah, it's always been really wet down here, or there's something about it that's bothering them. And I'll look at them and I'll say, you know what you need? You need a native meadow here.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And they go, yeah, I heard about this. And that's how the conversation really starts from there.
Oh, followed by the thought, oh, and I won't have to mow it.
Well, right, exactly. From there, it all extrapolates. I mean, you have a yearly mowing. Look at that. The maintenance is down. We hear in the beginning, a lot of conversation happens around, well, what's it going to look like? Right. You know, I don't want this wild thing. Or some people do want this wild thing. I think that there are ways to manage each one of those expectations. And one thing that Deborah's really great at and that I'm trying to be good at is this establishment of expectations from the start. What do our clients wish to see? How do they want to interact with it? If they want to get into it, great. We'll mow paths. You know, are you worried about ticks? Understandable. Except the fact that you can't go in the high areas, stick to the parts that are maintained. If you're in a homeowner association, you know, maybe there has to be a maintained lawn that acts as a buffer that is intentionally manicured so that what then grows as a meadow looks intentional. It doesn't look like an area that's been let go. You want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say the number one thing I've heard against the meadows from clients is, well, what about all of the ticks? And I say, well, there are ticks anyway. Then yes, you can mow the paths to walk through there so they're not attaching right onto you. But the thing about ticks is it's out of balance right now. And if you're going to be installing the meadow and you're going to be increasing the biodiversity, you're going to strike a better balance. So you might not find as many ticks in a meadow. You know, you might find maybe more possums that are eating the ticks, something along those lines. But I think that we need to be pushing that balance point little bit stronger than what I've been hearing. I've just been hearing this from webinars that I participated in over the winter, like, oh yes, that's right, they're out of balance, and what we need is an ecological balance, and that could potentially reduce the amount of ticks that we're seeing.
Well, and we had a tick expert on, I don't know if it's aired yet, but she basically said, once you walk off your deck, it doesn't matter if you're, yeah, I mean, right, you're in the lawn,
you're
going to get ticks anyway. It's just, there's just no avoiding.
If you're in the woods,
it,
you're going to have ticks, right, hopping onto you. You're a warm body. They're going to find you.
So expectations, again, especially people who are non-gardeners. My thought is that people would think, oh, it's going to look like a beautiful flowering garden the first year.
Right.
And that's probably not true, right? Or are there certain species that you can plant where you do see some flowering the first year and the second year, and maybe they're different species? Is that
right? Well, like usually in like a meadow mix, you might find some annuals that are, you know, self-seeding annuals. They'll give you that kind of initial flowers, but it should also be understood in a meadow, you're going to have predominantly grasses. That's what our meadows are made of. And if you're following proper maintenance, by maybe year three, you'll start to get some more of those perennial flowers that we all love, you know, the echinaceas and rudbeckias and those sorts of things. But it is important to understand that it is predominantly grasses. So they're not really meant to be full of blooms necessarily. If we want to do have more blooms, then we might want to think of what I would consider a more manicured meadow, where you can use meadow species but create a more manicured garden. Maybe more of the, I don't want to say conventional because of all of the negative connotations, but a little bit more, you know, that's that process of installation. You could still have your native plants.
Okay, so Deborah, I'm going to assume this means that buying that big old sack full of seeds that says it's a northeastern meadow mix.
Meadow in a can?
Flinging them out there is not quite the most optimal way to go about this. How intense is the preparation if you want to have a really successful meadow?
I think the first step is to smother the turf that you have there for a while. Give it time to warm up, germinate the weed seeds, and kill off the weed seeds again.
And if you have a homeowners association, what's plan B?
Plan B for not doing that.
Well, first, tell us what you mean by smothering.
By smothering, I would get, you know, a tarp the size that you want your meadow, lay it down with sandbags, keep it firm down. You don't want a lot of airflow going in there, and basically killing off the vegetation that's underneath and starting with a clean slate.
And is it really a clean slate? Are you killing weed seeds too?
Yeah, like 12 weeks if you leave it on there, or longer, depending on the aggressive nature of whatever, you know, invasives you have growing there. Alternatively, you can get sort of an assessment done on, like, say, if you have a little bit, you know, of an existing wild area, you can have an assessment done of how many natives are there. Do you want to smother all of this, you know, or do you want to maybe do a light till, a little disturbance of the ground, and then seed over that and be careful and keep an eye on and observe how the seeds are germinating, how the natives are establishing themselves.
Okay, to get back to the smothering thing, you don't have any neighbors that care if you put a whole bunch of cardboard and tarps and things down. You've put them down for the 12 weeks. You've removed everything. Then what do? You've got a bunch of dead grass.
Right.
You turn it?
One thing that we've experimented a lot with this over the last year, and one thing that's become clear while we try to avoid tillage as much as possible. Tilling, you know, disturbs the soil structure. It does release carbon into the atmosphere, and we do want to keep that down in the soil to break up those grasses, to break up that turf, even with that smothering aspect of the tarp process. We found that you do need a disturbance. So we typically will till before we put the tarp down. We try to keep it to an inch or two, just enough to destroy that upper layer of turf or established grass.
And the seed. You get at more of the weed seed that way.
You'll turn some up.
Yeah.
For larger areas, tarping's not, it's not really an applicable model there. It's not feasible. So in those instances, we do a cycle of tillage. Again, attempting to keep it as minimal as possible in terms of depth, but enough to break up that top layer and stir up some of that seed bank to the top. Will then allow a period of time, it could be 5 to 7 days, enough for what's been turned up to start to germinate, and then we hit it again. Usually it's 2, 3, sometimes 4 passes of that initial tillage to continue to cycle that seed bank, try to get what's in that upper layer killed off. Then we'll often go through a cover crop phase, whether it's a winter cover crop that we're putting down to then seed the meadow in the spring, or it's a summer cover crop where we might seed a meadow in the fall. And then anytime we seed, we're also trying to mix those seeds, incorporate them into that upper half inch to inch of the soil just to get good contact and try to limit the amount of seed that is taken away by birds and turkeys.
So this goes back to those expectations. So I'm not going to have an instant meadow, right? I have to be a little patient. Right?
Well, again, it all depends on how we're going to go about establishment. Are we seeding it? Is it a large area? Seeding allows you, I think, greater diversity. It's much more cost effective, but you're going to wait a period of time to see those results. Mm-hmm. Popular saying, the first year it sleeps, the second year it creeps, the third year it leaps. And from what we've seen, that is a true way to envision how it could proceed. Now, if it's a smaller area, if it's a backyard type of situation, you have the plug model. You can go with bigger plants, so you can get a more immediate result, but it's going to come at a much greater expense. And
time is money.
Yeah.
Sure.
Wow. Yeah. I've heard people talk about controlled burns. I've heard people, I know we're all going to cringe here, talk about herbicides, using herbicides. Do you do any controlled burns or herbicides, or it's mostly tarps? You're trying to do it.
Through our research process in learning about how to create meadows, there are a lot of people in the industry who believe that using herbicide is, in some respects, a better way to go about it than, say, tillage. You don't have to disturb the soil structure. If you were to use a broad-spectrum herbicide, you can kill off all of the material that's there, and you can really create that blank slate. You don't have the risk of turning up seeds that are in the seed bank, having those compete with your plants, and you can use a seed drill with a tractor to do a large area fairly efficiently. I think there's always going to be more information coming to the surface about herbicide, about these types of pesticides and chemicals that are commonly used throughout agriculture. Our perspective is we would prefer not to introduce those. We understand that there are situations where they are the most effective means of control. I think we acknowledge that it's possible that you might not get that 100% pristine native meadow, that there probably will be some of what we would term weeds that persist. But that's a trade-off that we're willing to work with at this point as we work through this process. The controlled burns thing, from an insurance standpoint, we're not going to be doing controlled burns. It is a very accepted practice. I really don't know much about it. I think if homeowners wanted to take that on, I would leave that to them.
I know that people are talking about it more, but there's a real risk, right? And there's regulations, there's town regulations, there's county regulations. It's just kind of one of those things people are staying away from.
Sure. I don't know much about it. Maybe, Deborah, you know more about controlled burns.
I've only done flame weeding. I haven't done a large.
Oh, that sounds good. We like flame weeding.
You're coming to our house to do flame weeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't work on, or at least in my experience, this was down in Maryland, Bermuda grass. It would not do anything for Bermuda grass.
And it's slow anyway.
Right.
But it does give you that power.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And my question before we even started the podcast of just bringing soil in, I know there's lots of dangers to doing that and smothering the ground and just planting in that, is that that's nothing you do right now, right?
I wouldn't bring topsoil in. I'm going to just speak from my own experience. What I would probably bring in, I prefer to work with the soil that's there. Mm-hmm. If the soil needs remediation, I would go the cover crop route. I would bring in some quality compost. You might still get some weed seeds. I consider weeds being, you know, almost job security.
Right.
We're also really big fans, and I know you've had Dave Newman from mm-hmm. Arthur's Point Farm. We're big fans of his soil amendment, mm-hmm. His probiotic biochar amendment. Mm-hmm. So that's another product that we would incorporate if the soil needed work.
Right.
Yeah, I just think about and again, it's going to be me here, but like my soil is so heavy clay, horrible, that even if you killed the turf down below, it's not so great. Right.
But there are plants that have evolved to live in clay.
Yeah.
So it could be, you know, you need to choose site-specific seeds or plants. Mm.
Or if you viewed it as a transitional time period, you know, the addition of quality wood material, mulch, that over time will help build up that topsoil layer along with the plant species, the debris that comes off those species on a yearly basis, similar in the way that, you know, farmers are working on building topsoil out in the Midwest that's been eroded for years through tillage. You know, constant cover cropping, animal rotation. I think that's that could be viewed as a good way to build soil.
So we don't know what the soil is, what the conditions are. How do we know, other than going to experts, which plants are going to work?
I think what you're asking, yeah, we would come do the site visit, meet the client, do a site analysis, get an idea of what that specific environment is, and think of our past experiences in similar environments that have worked, what works, what doesn't work, and develop, usually in a very collaborative way, a plant list and process that would work with the client for what they were looking for.
And we talked about plugs. So you'd also be looking at, I assume, the size and what their expectation was in terms of how fast they wanted.
And we could talk about, you know, the different like price points, the different survival rates, and those sorts of things per project. So if, for example, there's this 20 by 30 foot space that you want to turn into a beautiful sitting area with native plant species, I would consider, you know, perhaps mass plantings where you would use the plugs because you can ensure full coverage, you know, if you're planting using the smaller plug plants. I would use the larger potted plants for beautiful specimens that you want. If you want to have like a field or a small field of grasses with big, beautiful flowers in it, maybe buy a potted plant for that specific flower. Is that kind of a line of question?
Yeah, that makes sense, because if you have a mass planting of something, now you're into a monoculture and you're farming and it's not a meadow anymore.
Right.
I think you meant a mass planting of grasses. It's still, there's diversity within those grasses.
Within the grasses, with
there's still
mass,
diversity
within
the plants.
Right,
it's more,
right.
If you wanted, you know, a couple of feature plants within a landscape, but the rest could kind of grow and come in over a couple of years.
Right.
There's flexibility in all of this. Mm-hmm. There's no one right way to do it. I think a lot of it is dictated by the size of the area and the money that people want to invest in a project.
Well, and expectations again, right? I mean, because if you have a seed mix, I assume you can't really kind of control where things go as much as planting plugs, right? So you could plant whole swaths of a particular species beside whole swaths of another if you have plugs, right?
Yeah. You can have a little bit more control, though, with the seed mixes. You know, if you're walking along and you're going up a slope and you want to use a different variety, you know, or a different seed mix altogether for one area and then the other, you can have some control in that. But if you're working in a smaller area and it's something that has to be very aesthetically beautiful, you're in like a courtyard of someone's big mansion or something like that, then, yeah, you can do these larger plantings of mixed species using plugs that would ensure greater coverage over a shorter period of time than using a seed mix.
Okay, we're talking about meadows, and the assumption, I think, in this whole conversation is that we're talking about native meadows.
Right.
And we had a discussion earlier on how native.
Yeah.
There are purists, it must be native to Columbia County or to the Hudson Valley or to the Northeast. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with purists? Or I mean, we don't care.
Or really, what's your definition of native is what you're asking, right? When you talk to a client, right? I mean, you just mentioned echinaceas, which we just had this conversation, geeks that we are, that echinaceas is probably not really truly native to Columbia County.
Right.
And people have called me on that before. But I consider it a native.
Right. You know? I would argue when it comes to a lot of meadow plant species, if you're in Columbia County or even, you know, going a little further east, there weren't meadows here.
Right.
You know,
right.
It was rocks.
Right.
So I think you have to think about like natural evolution of things, you know. As we've built up topsoil through farming, these meadow species have moved into this area. So there are some great organizations that will track the amount of pollinators that, you know, tap into these plants. And you can choose from there which ones are still attractive and useful for our pollinators. So I know the Mount, is it Mount Cuba Center?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do some really cool research. And there was this other woman I was listening to a lot, Kim Ehrman, who has a lot of experience doing native landscapes. And she has a lot of insight as to which cultivars, which native plants are actually not really native to the area. Mm-hmm. Even breaking it down, and I can't remember the name of this website, but it'll break it down to state. Like, you'll find these things are found native in Maine and in Massachusetts, but not in Vermont. You know, right. So you can get as detailed as you would, you know, as specific as
right.
you
in
want
New York
to.
State, you could have something native to Long Island and certainly not right. native to Columbia County, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I think to build upon that, in general, the seed mixes that we're using are native to the Northeast. And we're using the term native, right? It's a buzzword, native.
Right.
Native is very hot right now, but really it's code for the plants that are going to support the ecosystem that is here now. And as Deborah said, that's evolved over time. The reason why we are not using foreign plants is because our ecosystem has not adapted to utilize them as food sources, as habitat, as reproductive sites. That's why the focus on native.
Yeah, it's all about co-evolution, right?
Yeah.
And if an insect co-evolved with the plant, then it's, I consider it native, right?
Right.
And that and you can find that insect here. It's native. My example is the giant swallowtail, and maybe people have heard this before, but I'm dying to have giant swallowtails in my yard, so I'm planting all these plants in the citrus family. Are they native here? Well, if they come here from the south because of climate change, I'm considering
right.
them native.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right?
Yep. Yeah.
That's my definition. So you've now planted a meadow for your client. What about maintenance? Do you come back? Do you weed in the first year? Do you mow? What's maintenance like for this?
Right. Well, I've just joined New Leaf, so I'm going to let Caleb take
this one.
Smooth. So in terms of ongoing maintenance in that first year, well, let me step back. It depends on how you did installation. If you did a plug meadow, it's probably a slightly smaller area or a much smaller area than if you seeded it. It all depends on the size that you're starting with. So if it's an area that could be weeded, and if it's something that is important in the expectations portion of what you've discussed with the client, then that can certainly be part of it. For anything that's seeded, I don't think there's any expectation, or there really shouldn't be, that it's going to be weeded unless there were some very specific plants that started to pop up that really posed a threat, things that had a high seed reproductive rate that could become very invasive. Then you might want to go through an area and try to kind of spot attack those as much as possible. You know, there is monitoring that really should be done. Typically, it is not recommended that you irrigate. You really want to allow the natural volume of rain water and groundwater to provide the moisture necessary for germination, even if that delays germination. By adding nutrients, by adding water into the system, you can actually increase the chances you're going to get weed pressure. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of mowing, we would recommend an early to mid-spring mowing to about 8 inches in height on a yearly basis. For the first year during establishment, and occasionally for the second year, we recommend basically a monthly mowing, again, down to that 8-inch height. You're likely to have some annual weeds coming up. You want to make sure that they do not go to seed, and you want to make sure that those grasses, those native grasses and those herbaceous plants that are going to take 2 to 3 years to develop, are allowed sunlight and space to develop.
But you'd water if you did plugs, right? You'd do some water
yes.
with plugs.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yes,
I
with
mean,
plugs,
yeah.
you would need to irrigate. With seeds, we would not recommend that
right.
in most cases.
And you don't want to do tough love quite to the extent where you wouldn't water like this last summer where we had a drought. I mean, I was out mercy watering. You're going to lose stuff.
You know, that's a good question, and I think that goes exactly to the point that Tim just made. If you planted plugs or established plants, you would want to water that. We would plan around seeding a meadow in the middle of July in a drought.
Right.
We would wait and seed it in the end of August, early September, or we would make sure we were getting it in the spring when there was more expected rainfall. But as a general rule, even if you seeded it in May or June and then you hit a 3-week drought, we would suggest that you don't water it. Those
if it's
seeds
just seed.
Yeah, right. If there's seed, those seeds will be there. Mm-hmm. They'll wait. When the water comes, they'll germinate.
Another plug question for you, because I've been watching webinars too about people talking about not using mulch. So say this is a, you know, more of a big garden than a meadow and you used all plugs. Are you planting closer too, so that it's more like the plant material is the mulch? I mean, that's what I've been hearing people
yeah,
talk about
that's
lately.
Definitely an option. You can definitely plant very close together, minimize the amount of mulch you need. I personally prefer, you know, I get it, some people just really, really don't want to use mulch. I think it's important after that initial planting just to help maintain moisture levels.
For plugs, you're talking about.
Yeah, for plugs, unless it's so dense that there's no space in between, right. You know, and also it can be, you know, up to the client and their preference and time-wise and time efficiency. And if it's really, really packed full and, you know, you might not have the time to do the mulch, the client doesn't want it, you might be okay. But you have to be careful to water. Certainly.
Yeah, another thing that I would add there is you can do a combination of seeding and plugs, and we've done that. You can lay down meadow mix that's appropriate for the site that you're on, and then you can plant plugs into that mix, and then you can use some light straw to help mulch that, which would be temporary. Now, one thing that we haven't covered yet, but that should be mentioned, is that all of these meadow seed mixes that are typically used come with what's called a nurse crop mixed in with them. That's a fast-growing, usually it's an annual grain of some kind that's appropriate for the season, that will grow up quickly to provide coverage, that will assist with the organic matter going back into the soil and minimize the amount of open space while some of these slower germinating plants are given time to germinate and take over. Again, that's why it's important that you come in then, you know, either monthly or bi-monthly to make sure that you're ensuring that these grains are cut back down to that 8-inch height. But as an alternative to mulching, you can use that in a plug meadow as well. You can pre-seed this nurse crop, and then you can plant into that.
Okay, I have two baby meadows at my house. One of them I just let loose, and the other one, because it's on the highway, I had to treat a little bit differently, and it's more of a show garden. The work is totally different in each, so you have to know what you're dealing with when you're doing the maintenance. You don't just go in with a list and say, oh, okay, this is week number so-and-so, I have to mow to 8 inches. So you really got to make a commitment with these things, and I think maybe that's something that you are educating people to, I hope.
Again, it's about expectations, right? I guess, right?
Exactly, yeah. You know, I don't think anyone should be scared off by a commitment. It's definitely no more work than a typical garden. And in most cases, it's going to be much less. I think the initial establishment phase of that first year to potentially 2 years will take some increased attention. But that may just be a monthly visit from Deborah or myself to just make sure that things are looking good, make sure that the plants are coming along as we want them to, check on any potential weed pressure, and see where we're at in terms of a schedule for that first year of cutting back to 8 inches. Beyond that, in the subsequent years, in those maybe more wilder meadows, it truly is that single mowing a year. And that's really just to control woody growth.
So year three, you're probably just doing one mow.
Yeah.
So I have a question. I don't know if this is completely off topic or not, but what about deer pressure? Is when you're planting a meadow, does it make a difference in terms of plugs or seed? Or do you even take that into consideration?
Deer pressure is always there. I haven't personally experienced deer pressure to be as high in meadows. Maybe there's better sources of food in the area. Plants themselves aren't as palatable. They'd rather go over to that house over there that has the hosta.
Right, exactly. Or make sure your neighbors do have hostas.
Right.
Give gifts of hostas to all your neighbors.
Stick up all your hostas and plant a meadow. I like that. But I mean, it's obviously an issue here in most of the United States. It's probably with seedlings too.
I think it's something that is always going to be there. How much attention you want to give to it, again, would go back to the expectations of the project. There are going to be certain plants in the mix that the deer may be more predisposed to going after. how important it is that that area be protected from deer would come down to what would be determined as successful prior to the project starting, and then that would inform the plan going forward.
And you, so you would treat this totally differently from planting trees, right?
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, in most cases, the investment going into each individual tree is much more than the investment going into any one of these individual plants. And with trees, we're looking at getting them, typically, we're looking at getting them past, again, it's an establishment period, mm-hmm. To where they are either big enough to where the branching is above where the deer would be applying pressure, or if it's shrubs or smaller trees, where they've gotten to a point where they can withstand a little bit of deer browse. Trunk wraps, typically you want to make sure that you keep those on the trees so that you're not getting damage to the trunks. But in general, yes, we would treat this much differently.
So I'm a really bad person at visualization. You're talking to me. I'm your client. I don't know what you're talking about as far as seed or plugs. Or I want to see what a finished product might be. Do you have some examples of that that you could, that you've already planted and you've installed that, that I as a customer could go look at?
Yeah, absolutely. At our headquarters site where we have planted out a young nursery focusing on native trees and shrubs. We're also dedicating a large portion of that property to native meadows, native tree plantings, shrub plantings that are intended to be a showcase to the various stages of development that these meadows go through and the various land types that they can work in. So we have some more wetland areas on our headquarters site. We have some drier areas. We have some road frontage that's being planted out, and we're incorporating different native trees and shrubs in different ways within those meadows as well, trying to provide examples of how these might be utilized in the landscape in general.
And do those exist now? Like as a potential customer, I could come and look at those now if I made an appointment.
You will see the nursery crop coming up.
They're currently in process. So in a way, that's the beauty of it. We have two areas that were cover cropped last fall. They're getting seeded this spring. We'll be doing more cover cropping this summer, seeding more this fall and next spring. So there'll be constant activity and constant development over the next couple of years. It will allow us to compare different methods, to compare different time frames of where things are at, and experiment with different combinations of seed mixes, highlighting different seeds in different ways, and also how to utilize larger shrubs and plants within those meadow types to accomplish, you know, the typical landscape objectives that we often get. How do I screen my power pedestal? How do I screen my generator? I have this fuel tank that I don't want to see. How do I block that? So incorporating all of those real world issues into these new landscape.
I think that's brilliant. So it eventually becomes your showroom, basically, right?
Exactly.
That's very cool.
And we're starting now so people can see that process as it goes.
So that sounds like a road trip.
Yeah. Can we come right now?
Anytime.
I've loved hearing this. We've really been wanting to talk about meadows.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's been a pleasure.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.